Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Thursday, the 9th of August, the year 2012. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with Patrick Van Poole about Saturday's skate contest at the Pipeline Skate Park. We'll hear a story from Becca Brown from this last year's Mud Room series. And Nancy DeTourney will be giving us a rundown on art happenings in the capital city during Arts Up. And Writer's Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. Weather forecast for tonight looks like showers in the evening, then scattered showers later on. Low temperatures around 50 degrees. Forecast for Friday was mostly cloudy skies with a chance of showers and high temperatures around 58 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. Scientists are wrapping up 3 days of reviewing a federal assessment of the potential pebble mine in southwest Alaska. Opponents want federal intervention and are worried about water quality and impacts on salmon runs in Bristol Bay. Supporters point to jobs in an economically depressed region and say the assessment is premature. KSKA's Daisha Eaton reports on the first day of hearings.
The 12 scientists nominated to the Environmental Protection Agency's peer review panel faced a convention center full of stakeholders Tuesday, including many Alaska Natives. Shirley Nielsen of Kakanak said she wants the EPA to slow down because local people are confused.
I was born and raised on Lake Eliamna, and we have had so many different entities coming to our village with short visits to inform us on the watershed assessment. All of these visitors leave us confused from all this conflicting information. We need more time to digest what the watershed assessment means for our village and people. Thank you.
The Bristol Bay watershed is home to an estimated 4,000 Yupik Eskimo, Aleut, and Athabaskan Alaska Natives who rely largely on subsistence fishing and hunting. Many are also involved in the commercial fishery, which supplies about half of the world's sockeye salmon. Developers of the Pebble Mine, a huge copper and gold mine at the headwaters of 9 major river systems, are also asking the EPA to slow down. They want the EPA to wait on their assessment until mining companies apply for permits and finalize a plan. Jason Matrokin, CEO of the Bristol Bay Native Corporation, says that's a bad idea. At an earlier EPA hearing, he spoke in favor of moving ahead with the assessment, which he says could be used to provide protections for wild salmon that could stop the mine from being permitted.
We know the location of the deposit. We know the size of the deposit thus far. And we know the type of deposit, a porphyry or low-grade copper and gold deposit. Those things are not going to change. To us, that equals significant impacts, adverse impacts to the lifestyle of the people living there in the region and to the wild salmon fishery.
In a 2011 survey, more than 80% of Bristol Bay Native Corporation shareholders said they opposed the development of the proposed pebble mine because it endangered their traditional way of life. In Anchorage, I'm Daisha Eaton.
U.S. Montana Senator Max Baucus holds a field hearing to address Indian health care. Baucus heard from tribal members during the hearing Wednesday at the Crow Northern Cheyenne Hospital on the Crow Agency in Montana. According to television station KULR, concerns raised included funding and lack of services. Tribal leaders were asked to develop a list of solutions and submit them to the senator's office by November. The Native American Journalists Association releases a statement saying mainstream media outlets are evoking stereotypes and falsehoods about Native Americans. The organization on Wednesday gave the example of NBC's Today Show host, Matt Lauer, jokingly calling his co-host an Indian giver. Naja also urged the media to be mindful of the way stories are covered about a Cheyenne River Sioux elder. The elder is alleging he was mistreated by medical staff and claims he's been scarred with the letters KKK. Naja says several news reports have discredited his claims and made him appear incompetent and have compared his claims to the sightings of the Virgin Mary. Naja is encouraging news outlets to use the organization as a source when covering Native American stories. On this day in 1908, Mary Ross was born. She was the great-great-granddaughter of Cherokee Nation Chief John Ross and an aerospace pioneer. Ross was the first female engineer for Lockheed Missiles and Space Company. Her contributions in aerospace technology included areas in spaceflight and ballistic missiles. After retirement in the 1970s, she became an advocate for more female and Native American science students. Ross was nearly 100 years old at the time of her death. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico, by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, the Ford Foundation, and the Nathan Cummings Foundation.
And by the law firm of Sanosky Chambers, Saxe, Miller & Munson, advocating Native American interests throughout the United States, with offices in New Mexico, California, Alaska, and Washington, D.C.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Slept in the open, down by is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday, August the 9th, 2012. It's the birthday of Pierre-Charles L'Enfant, the engineer and architect born in Annette, France in 1754. He left school when he was 22 years old in 1776, came to America to volunteer for the colonial army, served under General Washington at Valley Forge. He liked to sketch pictures of Washington and other soldiers. After the war, settled in New York City and began working as an architect and a civil engineer. In 1791, L'Enfant lobbied Washington for a job designing the new capital, which was to be built on the banks of the Potomac. It was Thomas Jefferson who provided L'Enfant with maps of several European cities, and L'Enfant studied those and then laid out a plan for the important capital buildings connected by broad avenues at diagonals, over which he laid a grid of rectangular blocks, which created a lot of triangles and circles and squares where he planned to put statues or monuments. And he envisioned a long public walk, which he called the Grand Avenue, which eventually became the National Mall. L'Enfant was very stubborn. He was committed to his own ideas, refused to listen to the city commissioners who were supposed to be overseeing him. Washington fired him in 1792, whereupon L'Enfant spent a few years trying to collect payment for his services. He thought the government owed him about $95,000. In the end, Congress paid him $4,000. But in time, even though it took a while, most of L'Enfant's original plans for Washington, D.C. were realized. It's the anniversary of the debut of the cartoon character Betty Boop, 1930, in a cartoon called Dizzy Dishes. Max Fleischer was the artist. He designed her as a dog, a French poodle, but eventually her floppy ears evolved into hoop earrings, and she became a sex symbol, a woman. She was pretty racy at the beginning, but after the motion picture production code went into effect, her skirts got longer and her neckline got higher. It's the birthday of the science fiction author Daniel Keyes, Brooklyn, 1927, best known for his book Flowers for Algernon, about a laboratory mouse whose intelligence is surgically enhanced, and a janitor named Charlie Gordon, who becomes the first human test subject for IQ enhancement. The novel was published in 1966, and it's never been out of print, adapted for stage and screen and TV several times, including the feature film Charlie in 1968. Here's a poem for today by Jim Harrison, entitled Sunlight. After days of darkness I didn't understand, a second of yellow sunlight, here and gone through a hole in clouds as quickly as a flashbulb, an immense memory of a moment of grace withdrawn. It is said that we are here but seconds in cosmic time, 12.5 billion years. But who is saying this, and why? In the Salt Lake City airport, 8 out of 10 were fiddling relentlessly with cell phones. The world is too grand to reshape with babble. Outside, the hot sun beat down on clumsy metal birds, and an actual 10-million-year-old crow flew by, squawking in bemusement. We're doubtless as old as our mothers, thousands of generations waiting for the sunlight. Jim Harrison's poem Sunlight, from his collection Songs of Unreason, published by Copper Canyon Press and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. You can turn your iPhone or Android into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's Poetry app, available to everyone online at poetryfoundation.org. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Local broadcast of this program is made possible in part by Heritage Coffee Company, working to offer listeners locally roasted, certified organic coffees from around the world. Heritage Coffee Company, a proud sponsor of public radio in the capital city.
Thank you. Our next speaker is Becca Braun. Rebecca Braun was born and raised in Boston. She came to Juneau for a summer job with the Forest Service in 1994 and never left. After earning 2 degrees that she doesn't use, she stumbled into political journalism and is grateful to now make a living publishing and editing the Alaska Budget Report. She loves reading, running, traveling, skiing, cooking, and above all, people. This story is dedicated to her daughter Rosie and son Alder, and to the memory of their beloved dad, John Coet.
Okay, hi. I'm sorry, I've got paper, so throw the tomatoes at me, but I don't know, words on paper is kind of my bread and butter, so it just makes me feel better, thanks. So when I first heard the topic tonight was secrets, I thought, oh, please, count me out. Is there nothing sacred? My life has no privacy anymore. So I thought, all right, I'll figure something out. And sure enough, my son came home. He's 4. Came home from childcare the next day, and he said, Denali said he has a secret. And I could tell he was feeling a little depressed and forlorn about it, and I didn't quite know what to do. It was like he knew he was missing out on something, but he really had no idea what it was. Fortunately, my babysitter Nell was there, and she's a lot quicker on the dime than me, and she goes, you know, Alder, you can tell any secret to your mom. Nothing is secret from your mom. And I thought, oh, my God, she's such a genius. I never think of that stuff, teaching my kids about stranger danger and all that. Right, tell a kid, nothing's secret from your mom. So I go, right, right. And then you could just see this idea being born in his head. And he goes, I have a secret. I can tell you, Mom? And I go, yeah, yeah. Nell nods, yes, tell your mom. And he goes over and he stage whispers, Odin wore red pants today. That was Odin wore red pants. So I said, oh, good, thanks for telling me. You know, it just hit me how innocent he was, you know, to not even know what a secret is. Am I too close? I can hear it thumping. And I thought about secrets meaning something different to everybody, and some of you know Greg Erickson, my colleague, friend, mentor. We like to fight about the meaning of words at 3 in the morning. And Greg just flat out doesn't believe in secrets. To him, anything, if it's a secret, there must be corruption going on. He is so devoted to the public's right to know that he just flat out doesn't believe in secrets. So, you know, if Judy, his wife, who works with us, or I, has some particularly juicy tidbit that we promised to keep off the record, she'll come running back from the Capitol and say, oh, I've got to tell you guys something. Can you keep a secret? And Greg will emphatically say, no. So Judy and I leave the room and whisper together. As for me, I've always considered myself a pretty good secret keeper. And I kind of pride myself on that. And even though I'm pretty extroverted and talky and, you know, I do keep things secret. And when people tell me things off the record, they stay off the record. So I thought, what can I say tonight? My secrets are going with me to the grave. And then, of course, it hit me. And I thought, my secrets have already gone to the grave. You know, black humor is the way through it. And or, you know, gone to ashes, cremains. The metaphors really don't quite work for people who weren't buried. But that's another story. So last fall, I spent 4 months back east, Boston area, where I was born and raised. And I hadn't been there for an extended period of time since 1994. Boston accent's still alive and well. Anyway, not in me, as you can tell. But among other things, we went there for peer support. And, you know, I'm much more likely to mock support groups than join one. But when you're 39 and your husband suddenly drops dead, leaving you with an 8-year-old and a 2-year-old, you kind of start to have a hankering to be like one of the crowd. I thought, well, I'd sure love to sit in a room with a bunch of 39-year-old widows. So there I was, in a room with a bunch of 39-year-old widows on the first night of my young widow support group. And the facilitator, whose name was Holly, had big, big platinum blonde hair and a big Boston accent and a big heart. And when somebody was kind of weeping about something, she said, I know, honey, you've lost your future. You know, I tried not to laugh. And I thought, lost my future. And I just played with that one in my mind because it just didn't quite ring true. I thought, no, I don't feel that. my future used to be known, and I could picture it, and now it's just big and undelineated. It's needing to be reimagined. It's not gone. It's very much there and very much full of possibility and scariness. It's much more there than it was before. And I thought, if anything, I think I've lost my past. I've never been very good at taking pictures, and since the digital age came along, I'm just too disorganized to deal with it. And most of the journals and diaries I've kept have actually been lost. I left one in a night table on the island of Fiji, and I left one behind a rock in Joshua Tree Desert, and I've left at least one in an airport gate. I just always hope nobody can trace them to me, but I think they've been incinerated. But in any case, for whatever reason, I can't seem to hold on to my memories. And one of the beauties of marriage is that you create these shared memories. You know, there are certain stories you can really only tell with your spouse, even when you tell contradictory versions, or especially when you tell contradictory versions. The story of my daughter's birth is one. I genuinely don't remember the moment when the nurse snapped at my husband. And if you knew John, you would know that he was, of course, saying all the right things that he learned in birth class, just breathe it out, honey, and all that. And I'm in my 23rd hour of excruciating back labor. These are not childbearing hips. And, of course, I wanted the natural birth and all that. So, and apparently the nurse finally snapped at John, who was trying to be Mr. Sensitive, and said, do you know what she's doing? She's pushing a Mack truck uphill out her butt, or something like that. I don't remember the moment, you know. That was John's story. It was something like that. And I don't remember the moment when Rosie popped out. That was John's job. And I don't remember what happened on our honeymoon when we took a spontaneous detour to China and then a little further into China to a little town called Lijiang near Nepal, I think, Tibet. Where were we? See, he would remember that. And we ended up in a bar, and we befriended the owner, and I know there was something magical and genius that happened that night, but it was filed in John's memory. And there was also a mini trek we took through the Tiger Leaping Gorge, and I can't quite remember if we rescued a goat from a well or if that is something that somebody else did and told me. And I wish John were here to tell me whether this goat was real or not. I outsourced so much of my memory, I really just didn't realize there was no backup. Oh, dear. So much happened between us, only known by us, and a lot of it was mundane, probably boring, but that intimacy is really the fabric of love and marriage. And when your co-keeper of memory disappears unexpectedly, those details can vanish, too. So here I am, this great secret keeper, and I've forgotten my own secrets. I knew with instant clarity back on October 12, 2010, when I was in a hotel room in Minneapolis with my 2-year-old asleep and my 8-year-old very much awake and worried about her dad, who was now 3 hours late back from his run, when there was a knock on the door and three police officers opened it, and I just said, "Where's John?" And I got two words back. A police officer said, "John died." And I knew with instant clarity that this was the defining moment of my children's lives. And I think I keeled over. Somehow I was suddenly kind of had my nose in the carpet of the, I can picture the pattern on the carpet of the hotel hallway because the officers beckoned me out so that my daughter wouldn't hear. She was sitting in the hotel room. And suddenly I was sort of third person omniscient, above myself, and I saw Rosie as an adult, sort of through all the stages of her life, saying matter-of-factly, "My dad died when I was 8. And it was just a new and stunning and permanent truth. And I tried out Alder's life story. "My dad died when I was 2. And I knew Rosie would have some memories, although I would have to help her keep them. But I figured I would really have to plant memories in Alder, sort of, you know, secretly sow them and make him think they were his own. And I set to talking about John as often as I could, which is really quite easy if you knew John. You know, I'd show him the height mark on the wall and say, "You'll be that tall someday, too. And your dad used to juggle apples and eat them as he juggled. And your daddy used to make egg sandwiches. He was the best egg sandwich maker. That was the only thing he could make. And remember when you and your daddy would put coffee beans all over the floor and tell Rosie and me it was goat poop?" So now he remembers that. And a few weeks ago, going on about 18 months after John's death, we were in Foodland. I can cry for Foodland. and walked by a bin of peanuts in the shell, and Alder said, I want some of those. And I've never bought them and never really eaten them, and I wasn't sure if Alder had any idea what they were, but I said, okay, I'll get some, because I remember that John did occasionally get them. And I brought him home, and Alder immediately started to shelling them, and he said, Daddy and I used to eat these. And I never fed him that memory, and there are no photos of John shelling and eating peanuts. Somewhere within Alder, his own secret memory came into the light, and it was such a small thing, and yet it made me ecstatically happy. I guess it affirmed for me that beams of light will illuminate our past. The memory ebbs and flows, and when the only other living witness to a
also, to tell part of that recording, that was Becca Brown recorded live at one of the Mudrooms events going on this past year.
Spirit of Youth celebrates teenage Alaskans who are making our communities better places to live. They give their time, their hearts and minds, their passion, their creativity. Now, hear their stories.
Hi, my name is Ida Kava. I'm from Savunga, Alaska.
Ida stands out as a leader in her St. Lawrence Island village. Other young people and adults alike in Savunga see her this way. She was recently voted by her peers to be the captain of a local youth leadership group. And her teacher, Christina Seif, says she's always stood out as someone who looks out for others.
So the youth leaders are actually voted on by the students choose them. So Ida was one of the top students that was voted as being a student that everyone knows that they could go and talk to her.
Ida's active in getting the youth group organized and doing regular projects to bring positive messages to Savunga, whether it's organizing fun events for teens and little kids or helping with domestic violence and suicide prevention efforts. Ida gets involved. She says doing things does matter.
I believe that when a student sees another student doing a positive thing, I believe that it will keep passing on so the other students could do positive things, same as the first student was.
Again, teacher Christina Seif.
I think everybody knows that Ida's out there and that she will care for them. You know, a lot of people come to her for help when they have problems, whether they're thinking about suicide or other issues, family issues. They know they can go to her and talk to her.
I am Shanna Sheehy.
Give a young person you know a boost by recognizing the good things they're doing. Nominate at spiritofyouth.org.
Provided by the Association of Alaska School Boards, Initiative for Community Engagement.
Thank you. tonight on 360 North. It's Rain Country Reflections at 8, followed at 8:30 by the Alaska Film Archive series, where we learn about ourselves through documentaries from our past. Then at 9, watch AARP Alaska. Ann Secrets talks with guests who have information and suggestions of interest to all Alaskans. That's followed by The Aviators at 9:30 and the PBS documentary Can't Go Native, with a unique look at Japanese culture at 10. All tonight on 360 North.
On your mark, get set, go! Join Cancer Connection on Saturday, August 25th for the Beat the Odds Women's Race Against Breast Cancer. Pre-register before noon on August 24th for the 5K run or 2-mile walk at the following locations: Foggy Mountain Shop, Pavitt's Health and Fitness, JRC The Alaska Club, and Nugget Alaskan Outfitter. You can also register the morning of the race, which starts at 9 a.m. on August 25th at Riverbend School. Together we can beat the odds. This message brought to you by Cancer Connection. Thank you.
3:51, and you are tuned to KTUO News in Juneau here on a June afternoon, where our next guest is Nancy DeCherny from the Juneau Arts and Humanities Council. Nancy, thank you for coming over despite the rain.
Thanks for reminding me I needed to be over here.
Not a problem.
All right. So this is the last weekend for you to see the Perseverance Star performances. Baylor at the Back of the Boat is out at the Noise Pavilion at 7:30 tonight. It's Salmon Derby weekend, but that's why it's raining, I think. Let's see. Second Friday hip-hop class at the Canvas on Friday at 4. We have concerts in the park at 5:30. Juno String Ensembles, Clam Soup, Musical Moments. It's going to be at the Jack.
Well, just admit it.
Huh?
Just admit it.
It's going to be at the Jack, which is nice because the chairs are comfortable and we can have popcorn. This weekend also, the Juno Freewheelers are doing the Tour of Juno. Stage one starts on Friday at 5:30. It's the prologue. You go out to the bus parking lot at the Mendenhall Glacier, and they have all kinds of events all weekend long. I think if you go to the Cycle Alaska website, you can get the whole, all the information, or you can go to our website and look on the calendar. Let's see. We have Romeo and Juliet Friday night at 7:30 out at the Noise Pavilion. We have Saturday morning all kinds of things going on. Tour of Juno, Stage 2, starts at the Eagle Crest Hill Climb, about a half mile up the road. And there's a big garage sale that's a fundraiser for Holy Trinity Church, 8:30 to noon. There's the second Saturday market out at Homespun Mercantile in the Airport Shopping Center from 10 to 4. They're going to do the King Island Christmas Oratorio again, and they're holding auditions a couple of times this weekend, starting at 12:30 on Saturday. You should call 780-5225 or 209-6835 to schedule your audition time. Baylor in the Back of the Boat is at 2 o'clock on Saturday out at the Noise Pavilion. Tour of Juno Stage 3 is at 2 o'clock, and this is the North Douglas Time Trials. Bands in the Bowl. There's going to be four bands over in Cope Park running from 2 till about 7. It's kind of a potluck thing. Bring $5 to help pay for the bands. And Sequence is having a skate competition out at the skate park. Number 2 of 3 events. It starts at 3 o'clock. I think the warm-ups are at 1. The Summer Vocal Festival, there is a, this is the Juno Lyric Opera's event, the culmination of the workshops that they've been doing. It's at 7 o'clock. It's at Northern Lake Church. There's also a second annual Lebowski Charity Party, which supports KXLL and the Jack. This is at Rockwell, which is the old Elks Hall or Latinos. The movie will be at 8, I think. I think they're playing trivia at 7. The movie will be at 8, and then they'll have a costume contest at 10 p.m. And your tickets in advance, $10, include a Caucasian. If you don't get your tickets in advance, no Caucasians, I'm sorry. There's a Summer Gold Singing Jamboree at Resurrection Lutheran Church. This is just an informal gathering of singers at 7 o'clock. It's free, and there will be treats. 7:30, it's Pirates of Penzance Jr., which is the last of the Perseverance productions. It's at the Noise Pavilion. Let's see, Sunday morning, 9 a.m., Tour of Juno Stage 4 out at the Eagle Beach Road Race. Miles and miles these people are bicycling. Start at the Ock Rec Center near the main cabin. We have Sunday market at the Jack from noon until 4. Let's see, we have music and entertainment this coming Sunday. At 1 p.m., it's Noodle of Doom, and at 3 p.m., Clam Soup. Did I mention who's doing concerts in the park?
You did.
I did?
Mention it again, just for the
okay. Juno, it is the Juno String Ensembles. It is Clam Soup and Musical Moments. So, yeah, you get several opportunities to hear these folks. Because they're good. Let's see. On Monday, there's a bunch of camps starting. There's a 4-H Sustainable Harvest Camp for teenagers and preteens out at the Sauga Valley Center. You can call out and get information about that. 6 p.m. on Monday and 6 p.m. on Tuesdays are the other times for the auditions for the King Island Christmas Oratorio. And on Thursday at 7 p.m. at the Centennial Hall, they'll be doing the awards for Salmon Derby. and pitch-a-palooza. If you've got a book that you want published, this is your opportunity to meet with some book doctors who will talk to you about how to do that. And that's at the library on Thursday at 7 p.m. Did we make it?
Did you write a book?
No, I already did that. Don't need to do it again. You've written a book.
Couple.
Yeah, so there. Anyway, yeah, it's a pretty busy weekend, what with Salmon Derby and the Lyric Opera things and all the plays to go see. You know, we get all these visitors through our building, and they're amazed at what goes on in Juneau, Alaska. I am, too.
And when is the last concert in the park?
It will be the 17th.
All right, Nancy DeJourney, thank you for coming by and talking about things that are happening in the community. If you need more information on this or would like to see it again, check their website out at www.jahc.org.
Or ktoo.org.
Nancy, thank you for coming by. Time is 3:58, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juneau and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and Onk Bay area, tuned to K276 AF at 103.1. Lemon and Switzer Creek, K269 AO at 101.7. Gustavus listens on K201 AM 88.1. K220 BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. An excursion inlet in Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210 AS 89.9, and we're also online at www.ktoo.org. On a 3 on a junior afternoon, Pat Moore will be your host. He'll talk with Katie Bosler about upcoming classes at the University of Alaska Southeast, and we'll learn about this Saturday's Bands in the Bowl event with guest Pagan Hill. At Writer's Almanac Music and more tomorrow, 3 on a junior afternoon. The forecast for tonight, showers diminishing later on with patchy fog. Low temperatures around 50 degrees, southeast winds to 10 miles per hour. Forecast for Friday, looks like mostly cloudy skies with patchy fog in the morning and scattered showers in the afternoon with high temperatures around 59 degrees. Forecast Friday night, mostly cloudy skies with low temperatures around 49 degrees. Saturday, mostly cloudy skies with a chance of rain in the afternoon and high temperatures around 63 degrees. Thank you for tuning into Juno Afternoon. If you would like to be on a Juno Afternoon or know someone that should be, please give me a call. My name is Jeff Brown, 463-6425. Have a good evening.
You know, as the most effective treatment for gonorrhea.
Diseases that were once easily cured are coming dangerously close to being untreatable.
It's Thursday, August 9th, and this is All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Audie Cornish.
And I'm Alyssa Block. Coming up, the growing threat of drug-resistant diseases.
Also, how both...